thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show, plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m, with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m, with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. It's time for a brand new episode of the Happy Hour. Once again, it's Holly and Paulina keeping you company. We know that vision impairment can have an impact on those around us.
So this week, we'll hear from parents who are navigating the world of vision impairment. And we'll have more after this 1980s classic. It's Come On, Aileen!
You're listening to the Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Holly here, and as always, I'm joined by producer Paulina.
I'm still here. Now, on this week's Happy Hour, we're focusing on parenting and vision impairment. So I had a very honest conversation with Carla Golich, who is a mom and a full-time carer to her son, Cameron. Now, she speaks openly about the struggles she's faced during the pandemic due to the lack of support and how this had taken a toll on her mental health.
We'll also hear from Katie Beryl, a mum with sight loss. And next up, I'll be finding out about Victor UK's Parent Portal, which is a one-stop information hub for parents and carers raising a blind and partially sighted child. But first, here's the Monkees and I'm a Believer.
Our love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind.
Sight loss has an impact on those around us. I'm joined now by Charlotte Meller, who is a mum to a child with a vision impairment, and she also runs Victor UK's Parent Portal, which is a one-stop hub of information for parents and carers raising a blind or partially sighted child. It aims to share knowledge and reduce feelings of isolation. Charlotte, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh no, thank you for asking me to come along. It's always a pleasure to chat to you, Holly.
How did the Parent Portal come about?
So it was about 3 years ago. So what originally started out was I did a private parents blog about my daughter Scarlett, which was called Through Scarlett's Eyes. And when I initially started that website off, it was just talking about myself and my daughter. And then that, as that kind of grew in popularity, we started to house other parents' stories on there. And then both myself and Victor as a charity decided that we would kind of rebrand it as more of a generalised parents website. So I always still write about Scarlett on there, but it's not just my stories now, it's other parents' stories, it's other organisations. And we've also used it as like a platform to promote the young people's voice. We found the parents really benefit from talking to older visually impaired children than their own, you know, with it, it gives them a bit of a guidance of where their child's life could potentially go. So yeah, so it's got kind of life stories, my life, other people's lives, young people's lives. But then we've got a really large information section, which is just hopefully covering every little bit of information parents would need to know. So yeah, we just kind of tried to centralize everything that's out there and put the real, you know, this is for parents stamp on it. And it's also backed up by the Victor Parent Network, which is the Facebook dedicated support group. We've got about, I think, just shy of 700 members now, and it's quite a busy active group, and it's just a place where people can come and ask questions or share links that they think other parents might be interested in. It's really helpful.
As well as all of the information and resources you have on the Hub, you also offer workshops, and you've been doing a lot online over the pandemic. Can you tell us a bit about those?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously we've all been pushed on to this online way of living and working now, which at first we wasn't quite sure how to respond to as an organisation. You know, a lot of people were launching things immediately, you know, online sessions, Zoom ballet, Zoom yoga, you know, everything kind of went there quite quickly. And we took a bit of time really and thought, you know, where are the gaps in the market here? What are the areas we should be focusing on? I started around Child Mental Health Week. So we've always highlighted that, which is at the start of February, on the parents' side. But obviously with us, you know, being online so much more, we made a bigger song and dance about that week. And from there, we hosted our first children's mental health workshop, which looked at resilience, which we thought was like a key topic for parents. So the workshops are attended by parents, and the view is to give them the kind of the science and the information about what, you know, what resilience is, how can we develop it, what makes for a resilient child, you know, what things you can do with your child to make them more resilient. And from that, we had a follow-up session where we have some young visually impaired people come and do like a follow-up chat. So they listen to the first part, the information from the workshop providers, and then they have the follow-up chat the next week. And it's just, you know, parents have had time to listen to the information and process them and think about how they can apply the techniques or the recommendations to their own child's lives. You know, and with visually impaired people coming and sitting on the follow-up chats, it gives the parents opportunity to ask some, you know, from the horse's mouth type advice, really. So we did that one, and then we followed up with anxiety, and then we did the parents' virtual wellbeing retreat, and we separated that into like a professionals virtual tent, and lots of people from different organisations come and delivered talks for in there, like pre-recorded talks. And then we had a holistic tent which focused around kind of meditation and sound healing and sensory stories, and, you know, all accessible. And then we had an early years 10, which looked at kind of sleep and ways that parents could connect online with other parents of young people. So that's all housed on a microsite now. So that's still online for people to access. And there's around 40 different videos there giving people advice and help on to how to improve their emotional well-being, and not only just their well-being as a parent, but also their children's. And then we did the anxiety workshop, which Holly attended. She had a nice chat with our parents just to give some advice on how is your child actually feeling when they are, you know, experiencing anxiety, and what parents can do to help them through it. So it's been really busy, and we've been really lucky because everything that we've hosted has been oversubscribed by, you know, a large amount. So, you know, we've found that parents really want this stuff. And then towards the end of August, we're doing some stuff around transitions and self-advocacy and self-care. Lots and lots we've done, and lots in the pipeline as well. So it's been a really exciting time for parent services for Victor.
Yeah, it sounds it. Would you say that the workshops and resources you have on children's mental health help both parents and children when having these all important conversations? Because it often can be really daunting, can't it?
Yes, I completely agree. You know, and it's really hard sometimes to put yourself in someone's shoes completely, you know, whole, you know, and wholly understand what that child is going through at that time. So we're hoping this kind of combination of the science and the, you know, the information behind the particular emotion, teamed with the follow-up chat, which is the human element, we're hoping that the two combined are giving, you know, a really all-rounded approach to the subject, and giving people, you know, the confidence to talk about these thoughts and feelings and, you know, and struggles that they may face, and, you know, hopefully working towards ending some of the stigma that is attached with mental health. Yeah, people are, you know, a lot more happy to engage online now. It's been, we've been able to do things on a much more nationwide approach, and there's not the logistics or the finances or anything associated as if we were trying to pull people together for a face-to-face support group.
Yeah, so I guess in some ways it's actually made it more accessible.
Yes, I completely agree with that. It's, you know, people just turn the computer on. We try and time the workshops when the children are in bed, and, you know, we can just mess and change. And we're always very open to the parents to say if you have to nip out or if for whatever reason you miss it, you know, you can have the recording. So, yeah, it's been good in that respect.
You are a parent to a child with a vision impairment yourself. Has the parent portal helped you when navigating the world of vision impairment as a sighted parent?
Definitely, 100%. I've had a massive battle with the local authority with regards to the care package that my daughter receives. She's visually impaired, but she's also got like moderate to severe learning difficulties as well. She can, on occasion, be quite nocturnal, which isn't ideal, because you all need to be, you know, you need to be able to sleep to be, you know, have some good emotional well-being. And it's not just that. My other child, Sonny, who's a year younger than Scarlett, he's just naturally adopting this young carer's role for her. And it became more apparent during the pandemic, because they were at home all the time together. And Scarlett needs support with every aspect of her life, from feeding to changing to, you know, using the bathroom. So the battle was that the care package they'd given me wasn't significant enough. You know, Scarlett should have been able to get opportunities to mix with peers and to go and do things independent of me. And the short breaks facility that I wanted her to attend is also like an extension of her learning as well, and really focuses around independent living skills, and the facility is all adapted for Scarlett. So I used the parent portal and the network, you know, quite extensively, really, to help me get from A to B with this. And it was literally advice from the portal that had been given to me, which eventually meant that I won my case. So, you know, it's living proof that these support groups do help, and it's nice to be able to speak to people going through a similar situation. We all seem to be having these battles with local authorities over EHCP and support, and nothing's ever straightforward, and you have to find out so much information yourself. It's not made readily available to you. The network and the portal give me the skills and the support that I needed to help fight this.
If there are parents and carers listening who would like to visit the portal or join the network, how can they do that?
The website is victorparents.org.uk. So that's V-I-C-T-A parents, all lowercase, all one word, .org.uk. Or if you go onto Facebook, if you search the Victor Parent Network, and it'll bring up our group, and just send me a request and I'll let you in. We can all start chatting, and it's very nice. It's a nice place to be.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. Charlotte, thank you so much for joining me on the Happy Hour.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
The last year of the coronavirus pandemic has been difficult for many, but when you are a full-time carer, the challenges can be even more overwhelming. To talk about those challenges and how the last year has impacted her life, I'm joined now by mom, Carla Golich. It's so nice to speak with you again, Carla, because I think it's been a couple years since we caught up with you.
Yes, it is. Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me back.
So just to give a bit of a background, you are a mum to the sweetest boy ever, to little Cameron. Can you tell us a little bit more about Cameron and why you have to be a full-time carer?
Yeah, so Cameron is 8 years old now. He was born with a rare condition called Norrie disease. So that means he was born completely blind. And since then, he's gradually losing his hearing. He's also autistic and nonverbal as well. So Cameron heavily relies on adult support. And yeah, I'm his full-time carer.
So obviously it's a really demanding job because you're not just a mom, you're doing all these extra things, and it's not easy on a regular day. But has the pandemic and has the last year impacted how you're able to look after Cameron?
Yeah, I mean, it has been really, really challenging, especially during the first lockdown when everything sort of shut down. His school shut down for a little while, all the care services at home. We just felt sort of abandoned, and I was just left to it to care for Cameron and his sisters and do everything alone. My partner, Cameron's dad, continued to work all through lockdown. So it was just me at home with all three children, and not being able to go out and access the things that Cameron loves was just a really, really tricky time. So thankfully his school reopened part-time and offered him some hours each week to access school, because Cameron just absolutely thrives off of routine and structure and being able to access therapies like music therapy and rebound is really, really important for Cameron. So that was vital. So although that wasn't full time, it was just a few hours each week, that was really beneficial for him. It was life saving, really.
And it's also a few hours that you get to maybe take for yourself or maybe spend on your daughters as well, because you're not just a mom to Cameron, you're a mom to all of the kids in your household.
Yeah, it is so tricky it's really tricky to juggle being a mum of three anyway, but then add in Cameron's high level of needs. I mean, he still needs support in all aspects of life, and he's also fed through a gastrostomy tube as well every 4 hours. He has to have regular medications, and so first thing on the morning, I've just, before I even think about myself, I've got to just jump straight into the caring role and be there for Cameron, which can be quite tricky for my girls. I've got a 12-year-old and a 4-year-old, so they need to understand at their age that I love them all the same, but Cameron just needs me that little bit more. So it is really tricky to juggle. So yeah, and trying to find time for myself, just even simple self-care things can be really difficult. So I was really, really grateful for the support that Cameron had at school, because that did allow me a little bit of a break, because things could be really, really tough. I mean, some nights Cameron finds it hard to sleep. So sometimes I'm caring for him 24/7, and that's really hard to manage on little to no sleep as well.
So when everything was closed down, even when the school was closed down, were you able to reach to anyone for any help, or were you completely shut off?
We were completely shut off. I mean, social care just massively failed us. All the services shut down, in-home support. We've always received very little support outside of school anyway. So add COVID into the mix, it was just massively isolating.
And how has this impacted? Obviously, we know it was very hard for Cameron, but what about yourself? Has this affected your mental health?
Yes, actually. In January, I was admitted to hospital myself, where I started developing panic attacks due to anxiety. And what I was finding was I just use every ounce of myself to fight for Cameron against the local authority to cater to his basic needs. And everything is just a constant battle. And it just got to the stage where everything was just so overwhelming. I was experiencing panic attacks. And at the time, it just felt like I couldn't breathe, to the point that my 12-year-old had to actually call an ambulance for me because we just didn't know what was going on. And after many, many tests and hospital visits, we've just put it down to anxiety and stress. And it was a really, really tough time because I'm still a carer at the end of the day. I'm a mum and a carer, and I don't have much time to be ill and have things like that go on. So it was really difficult to manage, actually.
So you said they just put it down to anxiety, but anxiety and mental health, this can be really debilitating when it happens. It's not something that's easy or something that you can just brush off when it is your mental health that is failing and you feel like you can't do anything.
Yeah, definitely. I was praying, although obviously I didn't want anything to be wrong, I was praying it was something that could just be easily fixed. And like I said, I don't have time to be ill. I need to be the best. I need to be fit and healthy to be able to care for Cameron the best that I can. So, yeah. So once I discovered, actually, it's not a quick fix. I need to address this anxiety. I need to be supported to care for Cameron so that I can take time for my mental health, because that is really important.
So are you receiving, have things improved? Are you receiving more help now, just beyond the few hours of school that Cameron gets?
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like it had to get to crisis stage before social care stepped in to support us. But yeah, they actually put a care package in place where Cameron receives carers come in for a few hours each week. That's either to support him in the home or take him out into the community. And as soon as that support was set up, there was just an instant relief. And I was able to focus on my mental health, put time into myself and my two daughters as well. And yeah, that was just a massive turning point for our family. It was really positive.
So where do you think, obviously you mentioned there was a lot of failures when it came to helping your families, what do you think could be improved so other families like yours don't have to suffer to a point where someone literally breaks down?
I mean, first and foremost, the local authority need to listen more to families with disabled children, because yeah, they need to put themselves in our shoes and just listen more to our points and set up some sort of support, whether it was virtually or physical support. Something needed to be done. We were just sort of abandoned and left to it. I couldn't get hold of anyone. We were just left at home. Everything just shut down. But at the end of the day, I know COVID was happening, but Cameron's disability didn't go away during that time. It was still there day in, day out. They could have approached it a little bit better, and they could have put support in place with carers wearing full PPE and doing risk assessments where needed. They could have put that support in place a lot sooner.
So obviously we're talking about this really tough time that I'm very sorry your family had to go through it, but now I guess things are opening up a bit more. Is there anything you are looking forward to as restrictions ease?
I'm just looking forward to being able to take Cameron back to all the places that he loves and enjoying it as a family. Like he didn't understand why he couldn't visit the swimming pool or the trampoline park. Places like that where he can just enjoy himself and be a typical 8-year-old boy. That's all we want for him.
You are really active on social media when it comes to raising awareness about Cameron's needs and Norrie disease, and I guess the support that families like yours need when you are a full-time carer. How can we follow you?
Yeah, so I run a Facebook and Instagram page called Cameron Smile. And I first set it up a couple of years ago just because I found like it was therapy for myself to write down all these feelings and emotions and share our journey with others. And it's just been really positive because it's connected us with so many more families and opened up opportunities for our family. And it's just been amazing. I try to update it as regularly as possible. And I've connected with so many families because from day one of learning Cameron's diagnosis, I just felt absolutely devastated. And it was really isolating, not knowing any other family that were going through similar things. I just felt like I couldn't talk to people. Even friends and family didn't really understand what we were going through. So social media has been a lifeline to our family. So yeah, you can check it out. It's Cameron Smile.
That's perfect. Carla Golich, I'm really glad that you are doing better, and I hope things just continue improving for you this year. But in the meantime, thank you so much for sharing your story and Cameron's story on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
I'm gonna pick up the pieces and build a Lego house. If things go wrong, we can knock it down. My three words have two meanings, but there's one thing on my mind. It's all for you. And it's dark in a cold December, but I got you to keep me warm.
That was Ed Sheeran and Lego House, who may or may not be one of mine and Paulina's favourite artists. We'll let you decide. Before that, we heard from Carla Golich, who is a mum and carer to her 8-year-old son Cameron. It's striking to hear how the two roles have intertwined during the pandemic, and the lack of support that's been available for Carla and her family, as well as so many others up and down the country.
Yeah, I think the pandemic and things closing down has really had a detrimental effect on families like Carla's. And it was so hard to hear of the impact it had on her mental health. So remember, if you need emotional support or just straightforward advice, RNIB are here for you. So just call the RNIB helpline on 0303-123-9999. Now, the helpline is open 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. weekdays and 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. Saturdays. And alternatively, you can also email helpline@rnib.org.uk.
Or you could reach out to communities like Victor, which can help you feel less alone and offer support and advice. If you missed it earlier on in the show, their website is victor.org.uk, which is spelled VICTA.org.uk. Now, we've still got our motivational song of the week coming up on today's Happy Hour. But first, earlier this year, I spoke to mum Katie Beryl. Here's that conversation. Katie Beryl was diagnosed with Stargardt's in September 2017 at the age of 32. Katie is a wife, a mum, and a disability advocate. She uses her social media platforms to raise awareness of vision impairment and disability. She also runs a support group for people with Stargardt's and other macular dystrophy eye conditions. Katie joins me now. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
You're a mum to two wonderful little boys. How has sight loss had an impact on your family life?
It's not too bad for my toddler because obviously he doesn't understand, but my 9-year-old is very aware of it. And obviously, because it's progressive, it's sometimes quite difficult for him to understand sometimes that my vision is getting worse. And it's the little things that are starting to get harder, just, you know, like making the dinner and stuff like that. And I think it's hard for my 9-year-old to watch my eyesight decrease, but to also understand it at the same time. And the little things that I did with him when he was a baby are becoming a lot more harder this time around with Sawyer. So I am noticing a difference quite a bit. So, yeah, it can be quite challenging sometimes.
I saw on your social media that you said your son used to want to fix your eyesight, whereas now he's more helpful.
Yeah, bless him. he went through a stage, obviously, when I was first diagnosed, of just wanting to fix me. But now he understands that's not going to happen. And he's just really willing to help. He's absolutely amazing at helping me with, just if I was standing there struggling with food packaging and I can't read it, he will just notice and, you know, try and help me. It's lots of little things. He's just really mindful, and it's actually really, really nice. I never put on him, because I try not to let this affect them as much as it has to. But he's always just so eager to help me, and he's done that off his own back, which is actually really sweet.
How does it make you feel knowing that your sons will grow up to have a deeper understanding of vision impairment?
I actually think it's a good thing. Harvey's not just mindful about vision loss, but quite a lot of, all disabilities. He's very mindful that you can't always see a disability as well. And I just think having children with, you know, empathy and understanding like that is actually a really, really good thing.
Does it make you proud knowing that he's more aware and really mindful of these things?
It does, yeah. He does make me proud. He does. he's really caring and really loving, and I just hope Sawyer is the same. But I think with Harvey showing him, you know, I think he will be as well.
Looking ahead to the future, how do you feel about parenthood and sight loss? Because obviously they go hand in hand.
I mean, I've got a lot of useful vision, but I think it's very doable as well, because obviously there's a lot of technology to help these days. I would always say there are ways around everything, and, you know, it is doable. I know I've got useful vision and mine's progressing, but I do think it is doable, and there are ways of managing it.
What made you want to use your social media to share your life as a parent with sight loss and also set up your support group as well for people with Stargardt's and similar conditions?
When I was diagnosed, I'd just never heard of this before, and nobody had ever heard of Stargardt's before either. And I just tried to find like a support group or something. I couldn't find anything. I wasn't told where to go from the hospital either for support. And I just thought, I want to find other people that I could potentially meet up with that also has Stargardt's. So I decided to make up my own support group and find people that way, in the hope that if I put it on Facebook, people might search it and find me. So it was to create myself a support network, but also to find others and help each other, to support each other.
Have you found that it's done the best of both worlds?
Yeah, I think so. I've found so many people on social media, not only with Stargardt's but with sight loss, that have been just so helpful. I don't know where I or how I would have managed without half of them. It's just, people have just been so kind, and I really didn't know what to do when I got diagnosed, because I didn't even know how much vision I'd lose, and it's just, you know, social media for me has just helped me so much.
One of the things that you've spoken about recently on social media is toxic positivity, and how when you were diagnosed with Stargardt's, people told you to think happy thoughts rather than take time to grieve what you'd lost. How do you find the balance between being positive and sharing your true emotions?
I try and have a positive outlook. I have more positive days than I have negative days, but when I have the negative days, I need them. And I think anybody with progressive vision loss would say the same, because I just find if I hold in all my emotions, like this is adapting all the time, my vision's, you know, progressing all the time. And if I didn't have those negative days and felt sorry for myself, and I don't think I'd easily get to the positive ones, because I would be holding it all in to the point where I just don't think I would cope with it, if that makes any sense. I think you have to have those days to grieve, and then they enable you to get to the happier times.
Are you more aware of the negative days now and how they can help you focus on the positive days?
I think so, because once I've had a really down day, the next day I'm like, well, this is, you know, this is really good in my life and this is really good. And it actually makes me think of all the positives. And, you know, I think without sitting and dwelling on the negatives, I wouldn't maybe be able to focus more on the positives. I just think you just have to sometimes have a good cry, because vision loss isn't an easy thing to go through. And I don't think people understand, you know, who aren't going through it, that progressive vision loss is very, very difficult. And I know it sounds silly, but I don't have any time frame either. So I'm always thinking, oh, you know, what if next year I can't see this or I can't do that? And, you know, it's just, I need to think of all the things that, you know, I'm losing, to think of all the things that I still have.
Has acknowledging all of the feelings surrounding your sight loss, both positive and negative, helped you with your diagnosis?
I still only feel like I was only diagnosed yesterday, but it has been 3 years. But I think with because mine's progressive, I don't think I've accepted it yet. I think I'm still going through, you know, I think I'll always go through that, just trying to take each day as it comes and, you know, just trying to just get through day by day, but taking all the positives out of that day. I never try and think too far ahead, and just try and keep going best I can.
Can you tell us a bit about your support group that you set up?
Yeah, I think I started it a few months after my diagnosis, and it's called the UK Support Group for Stargardt's and Juvenile Central Vision Loss, and it's on Facebook. You don't have to be from the UK, it's mainly UK-based information, from like hospital and stuff and what people share, from charities and that, but anyone's welcome to join with Stargardt's or Central Vision Loss, or anyone that feels it may be beneficial to them, even if it's someone, you know, that's got vision loss that just wants to meet other people. I think it's about 500 members on there now, and it's an active page. So I would recommend a support group for anybody, just to talk through, you know, things that you're worried about and just hear from others that are going through the same thing.
If people would like to follow your parenting and sight loss journey on social media, where can they do that?
I've got a website, which is katiesvision.co.uk, and I'm at Katie B on all my social media, and that's KAYTEEBEEXX. It's a bit of a mouthful. When I started it, I didn't really expect to, you know, I didn't expect to do this really. I started at the support group and just started an Instagram page. I didn't really think I would start any of the like social media, but it just sort of went from there, and the more people I found with sight loss, I just carried on.
Are you glad that you've started doing the work you do?
Yeah, I am, yeah. With finding other people as well, and just, you know, trying to give inspiration to other people, and just so people know that it's not always going to be easy, but you can still have a good life with sight loss. And you can, you know, sight loss doesn't stop you being a great parent. And, you know, I'm no different to a fully sighted parent. I might just have to do things slightly different.
Katie, it's been brilliant to chat to you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Happy Hour.
Thank you.
They paid their eyes, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paid their eyes, put up a parking lot.
That was Vanessa Carlton and Big Yellow Taxi on the Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. And it's the end of today's show. As always, we are going to finish with the motivational song of the week.
We are always on the lookout for songs for this part of the show. So if there's a particular motivational song that means a lot to you, then get in touch and it could be played on a future episode of the Happy Hour.
Exactly, and you can email radio@rnib.org.uk, tweet @RNIB Radio, or message us on Facebook, where RNIB Connect Radio.
Here's one of today's guests, Charlotte Meller, with her motivational song.
Hi, I'm Charlotte. I'm from Victor, I would like to pick the song Sway as the Sun Rises, and that's written and performed by Laurie Wright. The reason I've picked this song as a motivational one is that it has very special connections for my daughter. She is an absolute music lover, and we're very good friends of the artist of this song, and he always goes that extra mile to kind of include her in her live shows, so she can come along and listen to the live performances, which makes her super happy, which in turn makes me super happy.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full along with all the interviews, tips and our chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. And we have new episodes every other week. But for now, I hope you enjoyed the Happy Hour podcast and we'll see you on the next episode.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.